You see at the top, Bobby Manning says Shane Larkin, a game low minus 13, wouldn't go back to him in the second half. Who responds after the game? 11:19 timestamp, plus 13 second half. Keep the faith.
Dome Theory.
Smith, down in Orlando, Florida, who's keeping track of everything today. It's been a while, Keith. We used to talk a lot on the old Celtics Blog podcast.
Yeah, it has been.
I'm so thrilled to read what you posted earlier that you're going to be going and pushing a full-time basketball reporting career between part-time stuff, freelance stuff. I've been waiting for this for years now. You've been putting in work between a full-time job and a part-time job. And honestly, just one of the leading, you know, news reporting guys around the league, one of the leading voices on the Celtics. I mean, you've put in so much work and you deserve this. And how are you going to try to make it work?
Same thing I've been doing, just a lot of hard work. Just now I don't have to get up and go to a 9-to-5 anymore. I can just focus on basketball. So I'm really excited for that. It's going to really free up a lot for my family too, which is really important to me, because doing this alongside a full-time job, they've had to sacrifice a lot, and it's going to bring a little bit of balance back to our lives that way too. So all around, I'm really, really excited. It's been a dream of mine for a long time, and here we go.
How are you going to quit that job?
I've already done.
Is it going to be one of those dramatic ones?
No. I'm not burning any bridges. I've been with my full-time company for 20 years. Would have been this year. So I'm walking away there with a heavy heart. It's nothing I ever kind of envisioned doing. I love where I've been and the people there. So we're not burning any bridges, because this life in the media is tough. You never know when they're going to pull the plug on you unexpectedly. So you got to be prepared for anything.
For sure. So let's waste no time, because there's a lot going on. There might be news breaking during this. By the time people hear it, that 3 p.m. deadline will have passed. And we'll probably miss a few things that come through in the last hour and even after. I know we talked to Brad Stevens at Celtic Shootaround about the time Isaiah Thomas, Luigi Datome, and Jonas Jerebko went through as the buzzer was sounding. So those type of things happen in this situation. I'm going to play that actually right here real quick, because I thought that was interesting. Stevens looking back on that.
Looking back on that Isaiah trade, that all those years back, what was that process like on that day between you and Danny, like we talked about?
He called. We were in Sacramento. It was, I think, 11:50 Pacific time, 3 o'clock deadline for Eastern. So the deadline was in 10 minutes, and Danny called and said, we're not doing anything. And 10 minutes later, we had traded for Isaiah, Jerebko, and Datome. And I still didn't have any idea, as I got the calls, who was going out at the time. So we were getting ready for a team meeting at 12:15. So I had to, I think one of them knew on Twitter that they had been traded, the other didn't. And so that's just the way the world works, unfortunately. You know, you're preparing for the next game, you're preparing for the next practice, and sometimes that life stuff creeps in and happens. That's why the deadline's, fun day for all that aren't involved, but can be certainly not as fun for the guys that are involved.
The first one we got just yesterday, that 12-team trade, Keith, and Stevens commented about this too. Wow, the cap people in the league to make this work, 12 players going between four teams, picks flying around. It was unbelievable how this thing developed. And I got to ask, how did a simple Clint Capella trade between the Hawks and Rockets become 12 players, four teams, and by my count, two picks?
Yeah, what ends up happening in these things is it's weird, right? Because people love to send screenshots of the trade machines, whichever one you like to use, of four teams. And then, you could even add this one in there and all those things. And I usually ignore those because it's so, unrealistic. But this one went down. And what's really interesting about the way this one came together is that you had the basic framework of the Rockets wanted to get Robert Covington. The only way they could do that was by moving Clint Capela. The Hawks were interested in a center. And then you had the Denver Nuggets basically kind of jump in to help facilitate and move some players around. And they got paid to take on some expiring contracts and move a couple younger guys to Minnesota that were really not part of the rotation in Denver or weren't part of their future plans. So it's pretty rare, but what you have is you have four smart, aggressive front offices. You have a couple guys who have worked together in Gerson Rosas and Daryl Morey for years. So that framework becomes very easy there because they know and they're not going to waste a lot of time. That's why these deals don't come together very often. It's because it takes a long time if guys don't already have that relationship. And they're not going to waste each other's time with saying, well, maybe we'll do this. And what do you think about that? And then we get back. Morey and Rosas, who were kind of the two key components to get this thing kicked off, they know each other really well. So they're able to get right in there with that trust level. Here's what we're trying to do. What do you need? What do you need? All right, maybe we can pull in this team, and off we go.
I get what the Hawks are doing here because we saw them play the Celtics just the other day, and you have a 50% canter going off on them. They have no size whatsoever going into this deal. So I get that, even with Capela being banged up. Denver picked up some decent pieces here for a pretty cheap price and a first-round pick. But I look at Houston, and I love Robert Covington. A lot of people have a different thought about what kind of level of an impact player he is. But they pretty much eliminate all size that they have aside from Jordan Bell coming in this one. Isaiah Hartenstein shown a few things here or there. But they're committed to P.J. Tucker playing center for probably 80% plus of these games.
Yeah, it's what I think you're going to see is they're going to add somebody else, whether that's through another smaller trade here. They created about a $3.6 million trade exception in this deal. So they'll be on the lookout for another big who can fit in because they're not going to subject Tucker to playing the five for the entirety of the regular season. But once we get to the playoffs, that's going to be the point. You might see a Tyson Chandler come in. We call the Keith Bogans or the back in the day, the Irvin Johnson kind of deal where not Magic Johnson, but Irvin Johnson, the center I'm just looking to see what's going on here. It sounds like that Miami Memphis trade is coming together. Awesome. What you asked about is they're going to play him at the five pretty regularly. Chandler might get those starts, come out after, 5 minutes or so, and then they'll go small the rest of the way. But they're focused on, still adding another piece or two to beef up that front court because they know Tucker. They can't ask him to play another 30 games plus what's hopefully a long playoff run as the five man. He, as tough as he is, he just won't be able to hold up to that.
Yeah, 35 too. But I love the supporting cast they put together there. Gordon, Covington, Tucker. That's a ton of shooting. And Russell Westbrook playing better too. It's a risk, but I think it's a strong one there. Giving up a first-round pick is tough, but, they're in that win-now mode. I'm more befuddled by Minnesota and what they're doing here because it's stunning to look at them and see that they're 14th in the West. They had an 11-game losing streak. Cat's starting to sound frustrated with what's going on there. And their love affair with D'Angelo Russell continues so much that you almost assume they're never going to get their hands on him by how open they want this guy. But they pick up Allen Crabbe for Jeff Teague. I think that one turned some heads. It certainly turned mine. And then this one, they pick up a few spare parts from Denver. I like Hernan Gomez. Beasley's shown some promise. They get Evan Turner, which is just a big contract I don't know what they're going to do with. What are they doing?
Yeah, this was about getting Beasley and Hernan Gomez, especially Beasley. He's a guy who can fit there. He can give them some wing scoring. They'll have his match rights as a restricted free agent this summer, so they'll be able to get something done with him. Hernan Gomez, we'll see what it looks like. He can play the three and the four. They really don't have any true fours on the roster that really fit great alongside Karl Anthony Towns, so I think you'll see him get at least an opportunity there to fill that in. Where they're really lacking now is they don't have a point guard, and while they have the hard eyes emoji towards D'Angelo Russell, and that's how they feel about him, it's not coming together right now because they just don't have the pieces to send to the Warriors to make it work. The Warriors, they maybe would take Andrew Wiggins, but the Wolves are gonna have to pay a significant price for not only Russell the player, but then the Warriors to take on Wiggins. So they're going to have to work that out. I expect them to be active trying to find a point guard. They have been since they traded with Shabazz Napier in that four-team trade, because they don't have a real point guard on the roster now other than a two-way player named Jordan McLaughlin, who's an okay player and he can do some things, but there's a reason he's on a two-way. So they're going to have to work that out and figure it out as we go here.
They might be in the most urgent situation of anyone but Philadelphia. And Philadelphia made a good move. It sounded like them, Boston, some others were in on Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson III. Probably two of the most underrated names coming into this. I mean, I looked at their synergy page. They rank very well offensively in quite a few different areas. They're both having good seasons with the Warriors. Burks has a spot-up shooter. Robinson working in between and at the basket. And those guys flew under the radar, and they look like they're going to be enormously productive scoring fill-in guys in the rotation for the 76ers, who have had such awkward rotations all year long. I don't think they're cure-alls for Philly, but they get those guys. Golden State picks up 3 second-round picks, which I'm not sure how you rate that, especially coming from different locations. But I love the move for Philly. I certainly do. And Golden State had to get rid of those guys. Sounded like they got a pretty good return on them. Is this going to change Philly's fortunes all that much, as they really just struggle immensely right now, losing to the Hawks, Dallas, and some others, giving up 120-plus?
Yeah, it's definitely going to help them. I don't think it solves everything, but they needed another guy or two who could create some offense on their bench. The challenge is, it's hard to see either one of those guys being part of their closing lineup, and that's where they really have a lot of trouble. That their main five guys, their five starters, when they're healthy, there's still a lot of fit issues there, that they're very clunky offensively. So we'll see what ultimately comes of it, but it's not going to hurt anything. The other good thing is, too, it gives them the ability to get a little more versatile with some lineups, change some things up. I think Burks is a guy who, now we're on team 3 or 4 who's thought, hey, this guy will really help, and you know, in the playoffs, and then he doesn't end up doing all that much. Robinson, there's a lot of questions of, is this good stats, bad team? You know, what does this look like? So we'll ultimately see. I don't think it's going to hurt Philly at all, because they're going to be upgrades over whoever it is they replace there, whether that be Trey Burke and Jonah Bolden or whatever that looks like. But I don't think we can, you know, all of a sudden say, hey, everything's fixed, they're now contenders again.
We'll get to Iguodala in a second. What are Keith Smith's 3 big gripes about trade deadline season? I know you love setting people straight on the cap. I know you like shooting down ridiculous trades. We mentioned the 12-player, 4-team trade proposal. It was so funny. Shane Young, who covers the Warriors and the NBA as a whole, tweeted 6 hours before that trade went down, I'm sick of seeing people's 12-player, 4-team trades. This stuff never happens. And then that trade went down 6 hours later. So what are your 3 big gripes trade deadline season?
That's definitely pretty high on the list, just because it did happen, but that's, it'll probably be, I mean, it's been, it was 2005 was the last time we had anything close to this big. So, you know, all right, if it happens every 15 years, all right, that's not enough reason to put them crazy things together. I think the second thing is the way people overvalue role players on their own team. It's really hard to get people to understand that, you know, hey, I know you love Alec Burks, but he's not getting you a good first round pick. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And then the third thing is just that people don't understand how hard it is for trades to happen. 2 teams getting together on a trade is really tough. There's a lot that goes into it. And I think when you get the number of people replying to you just saying, why is Team X, like, we both cover the Celtics, why is Danny Ainge not doing anything? Well, he's trying. He's talking to people, but it's not as easy as people think. And then you see the thing like Burks and Robinson to Philadelphia, and people are like, well, they got it done. Well, that doesn't mean it's all trades aren't made equal. Philly was willing to say, all right, you know, we'll eat dead salary this year, not an issue. Golden State was not taking any money on past this season and really didn't even want to take any money on this season. That puts the Celtics in a tough position, because they don't really have anybody who in that position where they could send out. And I know people are screaming and yelling about, well, they could have just dumped Javonte Green or Brad Wanamaker. Well, those guys have been important players for Boston, and I don't think they're necessarily going to say, I'm not seeing, you know, Burks and Robinson necessarily as major upgrades there, because it's already hard for Green and Green to get consistent minutes. How is somebody else going to crack in there? And that's where it's always harder. Then I'll add one other thing too, is this is not NBA 2K. You can't turn the cap and the trade rules off. They all matter. They all count. And these are real people too, because I always go back to when Orlando and Toronto made the Serge Ibaka for Terrence Ross trade a few years ago, there was all this consternation of why is Ibaka not already in Toronto and playing? Well, think if your company you work for said, we've traded you to another company that's in another city halfway across the country, or in that case, in an entire different country, you're probably not going to be able to just jump and go. It doesn't work that way. And it doesn't matter that these guys are millionaires. And I'm not saying you should feel bad for them. We have to recognize that there is, you know, real life factors that come into play with this as well.
Yeah, I like the point about the different scenarios and different situations between two teams as well, because I saw people comparing two different trades. I don't remember which one specifically, but one involved unprotecting a pick that was top 14 protected. And if two teams are in a position where one owns the other's pick and they can get the other one unprotected, I mean, that's a very unique circumstance that gives that team a leg up. So there's a lot of circumstances that come into play that give one team the benefit over the other. Iguodala, I don't want to harp too long on this because I could go on for a whole episode about this situation, but I really thought it was disgraceful what was going on in Memphis, and I didn't like how the media was giving him, the media, I hate to say that, but I didn't like how they were giving him the benefit of the doubt there, saying that the two sides agreed to it, and even after this trade got done, him coming out and say that he took control of his own destiny and stuff like that. I mean, he basically wasn't showing up to Memphis from day one. Memphis just kind of had to roll along with it, and basically he didn't honor his contract there, which I thought was just a terrible thing. He was one of my favorite players growing up, so this isn't a guy that I hold animosity toward by any means. I just didn't like how he handled things in Memphis, but he ends up in a good situation in the end in Miami. The question is, what does he have left after not playing this season, not playing all that well that last season in Golden State? And they give up Justice Winslow, who people went crazy about in this one. I don't think he's shown a ton of promise now, quite a few years into his career, but he's still a young player who Miami was holding out on. And Memphis, you get him for Iguodala, who wasn't even showing up at the front door. I mean, they got to love what's going on here. You have to love what's going on in Memphis. Between them being very defiant about the Iguodala situation, extending Brooks, and now getting Winslow in there. Great trade for them. For Miami, I mean, this is probably going to be very stringent on them getting Danilo Gallinari with Iguodala too, because I'm not sure Iguodala alone brings them to any higher level.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they're going to that. That sounds like that part of it is at least dead for now. What it sounds like that trade's coming together is it's going to be Iguodala, Jay Crowder, and Solomon Hill for likely James Johnson, Deion Waiters, and Justice Winslow. That's what it sounds like it's being pieced together as. We'll see what the ending terms are. They haven't been able to get traction with getting OKC to buy into a Gallo trade. So that's a little tricky, but they're getting off some money in this deal as well as bringing in Iguodala. I actually think Jay Crowder will help them more than Andre Iguodala will
throughout the course of the rest of the season.
Yeah, so we'll see what that ends up ultimately looking like. We know for sure it's Iguodala, Crowder, and Hill to Miami. We know for sure it's Waiters and Winslow to Memphis. It's that third player because the Heat have to get in under the hard cap. So it sounds like it's probably going to be James Johnson, but we'll see what that looks like in the end. I push back a little bit on the Iguodala situation because I think it was made out very people are kind of painting him as a villain, where that trade for Memphis was never about him as a player anyway. It was about them getting a first-round pick to eat his salary when the Warriors had to get in under the hard cap. So it was never about bringing him in as a player. He didn't want to go there. They didn't expect to be the team that they are, even in their wildest dreams. If you could get them to be honest, no one would have said that they were going to be a playoff team that's even involved in that organization. And so they very quickly agreed with him. Yeah. Go ahead, stay home. It doesn't make sense for you to come here and be a part of a rebuilding team. They didn't want to give him minutes. He wasn't, comfortable with that. So they all agreed. So I think he gets beat up on a lot here because, it's just, not there. Now, what's happening is we're rewriting history because now they're a good team and they're a playoff contender. And people are like, why doesn't he want to be a part of a playoff contender? Well, that decision was made in July that he wasn't going to be a real part of this team. And what's happened since, maybe it should have changed things, but nobody really wanted that. Memphis was content with the guys they had. So, you know, so you just got to kind of let it go and move on. They already got a first round pick. Now they're going to get, you know, at least a helpful player in Winslow. We'll see what else ultimately comes their way. Winslow, he's got to stay healthy to make an impact. So we'll see what that ultimately ends up looking like. But, you know, right now it's, you know, it's looking like they're moving on and they're getting the best they could have done for Andre Iguodala.
I just generally don't like those situations. I didn't like when Cleveland sent J.R. Smith and that all but ended his career when he got sent home. By my understanding, they want him at training camp, and you're certainly 100% right about the situation Memphis had coming into this year, and they probably would have opted for younger players over him in that rotation. I think it's just a shame to have one of the better players in the league sitting out over half the season when he was definitely able to play. I want to go through some other names rapid fire before we get you out of here and onto the other deadline work that you're doing. First of all, Andre Drummond, Derrick Rose in Detroit. Do you anticipate either of them moving, or are they just going to have to take those guys in the free agency?
Yeah, definitely not Drummond. Sounds like any chance of that happening is done. People just aren't looking for centers like that, and nobody wants to have to pay him this summer if he opts out. So I think that's going to be him staying there. Derrick Rose, there, Pistons have just set a very high asking price that no team is willing to meet. We're under 3 hours to go, so we'll see. Maybe somebody steps up. Teams start to get a little bit desperate as we get close to the deadline. So maybe somebody agrees to pay that asking price from the Pistons, but they're content to hang on to him and readdress the summer if need be.
We hit on Russell real quick earlier, but it seems like Golden State's fallen in love with him a little bit since he's got there, and he has played well this year. They're going to have to be blown away to move him probably, right?
Yeah, my read on that situation is that they are going to the total details. Sorry, details are in. Yeah, it's James Johnson, Deion Waiters, and Justice Winslow for Iguodala, Hill, Crowder. No picks in the deal. So that is basically what it is. So we'll see how that goes. We're going to have to take a little bit to process that.
Waiters Island moves again.
That's it. But to your question on the Warriors and D'Angelo Russell, their intention is to, when Steph Curry gets back here in a few weeks, that they're going to evaluate how he looks alongside D'Angelo Russell and see what that looks like. If they feel good about it, they're happy to keep him. He's a very good player who's playing quite well for them. So we'll see what that looks like. If not, they're happy to take that into the summer and have him as a fantastic trade asset, not only as a player who can fetch a nice return, but a big contract that allows them to, you know, add either a whole bunch of depth or add another superstar player or something like that. So I think it's highly unlikely he moves within the next couple hours. I think he's probably going to stick right where he is.
Celtics probably standing pat.
We'll see. They're trying. They're trying. The challenge is they just don't have the tradable contracts to make it happen. They're not moving off of any of the top seven guys. So that's Hayward, Brown, Smart, Tatum, Walker, Cantor, and Tice. Those guys aren't going anywhere. They're not really inclined to move Grant Williams or Romeo Langford unless it's a massive upgrade for them. So they're trying. It's just the contracts just aren't there for them to do, you know, any sort of big blockbuster move. So if they do, it'll be something small, something that helps the bench. Maybe somebody can score a little bit there, but it's got to be the right player. It's got to be the right matchup. Keep an eye on They're still interested in Nemanja Bjelica from the Kings. There's been a little bit of talks there. We'll see what that ultimately resolves itself to as the Kings acquired Jabari Parker. So we'll see if there's anything there. But Boston's probably not going to do anything big. And they're pretty happy with the roster that they have right now because they feel like when everybody's healthy, they're one of the best teams in the league.
Davis Bertans is a big one with Bjelica too. Those seem like two of the best bench shooters on the market. I know the Bertans price is high.
Yeah, he's not really on the market. They set an insanely high price because they don't have any interest in moving him. The Wizards are still, you know, interested in being as good a team as they can be for the remainder of this season, and then they'd like to retain Bertans in the offseason.
Marcus Morris and the Knicks, there were some murmurings about the Lakers and them, but they weren't acting like sellers as of a few days ago.
Yeah, that's changed. They're going to move on from from him most likely. It'll either be the Knicks or the Lakers or the Clippers. More likely to be the Clippers. It's an easier trade that they can get to because of the matching salary. The Lakers will have to cobble together several players to make that work. Then I'm just not sure that they can get there.
The Kuzma situation's interesting. He's really the only big piece that they have. He could probably help them in small ball lineups, but they've been playing big all year long, and they want to continue to do that. We'll see what kind of success. Do you see Kuzma moving at the deadline?
I don't. He's too important, and he is a inexpensive talent, which the Lakers need because that roster's getting expensive. It's going to get more expensive as they pay Anthony Davis, so they're probably not going to move Kuzma. It just doesn't make sense.
The Cavaliers have been very quiet despite Thompson and Love seemingly being no-brainer trade pieces. Any noise there?
Yeah, nothing's going to happen with Kevin Love. No one's going to match salary and take on, you know, the $100-plus million left on his contract. That's not going to happen. But Thompson, they're trying again, though. That's almost an $18 million contract. It's a little hard to match for a lot of these teams. I think teams are hopeful that they'll buy him out. But that doesn't seem very likely unless the Cavs just straight release him, and they're not going to do that. They're going to do that. And what's important to note is Tristan Thompson's a Clutch Sports client. No Clutch Sports client has ever given back money in a buyout. So Thompson would be the first. That's pretty unlikely. So I think unless there's a trade, he's probably finishing out the year as a Cav.
That's a rough situation. The Bulls are in a weird spot. They've been very bad. They have a lot of young pieces. I've seen Markkanen's name mentioned, Zach LaVine possibly being used to pick up future assets. Is there any chance they could surprise people and make a move?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think teams are hunting around. There's, you know, rumors Lauri Markkanen's not overly happy there, and maybe you could steal him, but they're not going to just do that for you know, anything beyond a really good return. LaVine's not going anywhere. He's on a great contract for them, really productive, borderline all-star guy. So I think the Bulls probably most likely is they just sit it out, maybe a small deal, moving one of their smaller contracts, but highly unlikely we see anything big out of them.
Any surprise teams, players you think aren't being mentioned enough?
No, it's all the names we're hearing. It's those guys. Someone will do something weird in the next couple hours that we're not really expecting, but I'm nothing's pointing me to where that might come from. It's all the names that we expected to move. Everybody expects Marcus Morris to be on the move. Maybe a handful of the other Knicks veterans like Taj Gibson, Elfrid Payton. The Knicks might move Dennis Smith Jr. We'll see what that ultimately pans out to be. It's probably only going to be guys that are pretty assuredly going to stay with the Knicks at least till the summer. RJ Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, that's kind of their two untouchables. And then maybe they end up hanging on to Kevin Knox. They'll hang on to him through the deadline. We'll see what the summer looks like there. But the rest of that roster, they're pretty open for business.
Winslow, Wader, Hill to the Grizzlies, Iguodala, Crowder. And was there another piece coming from Grizzlies too?
It's Iguodala, Crowder, and Hill to the Heat.
Yes.
Johnson, Winslow, James Johnson, Justice Winslow, and Deion Waiters to the Grizzlies. And that sounds like that's it. Just three players for three players, and that's what the deal's going to be.
Captivating trade. That Grizzlies pick doesn't get any better for the Celtics, probably, which is disappointing after the Kings pick last year. But I love that team, love what they're doing, so I'm not too upset about it. Keith Smith. You can follow him all day long at Keith Smith NBA and on into the summer. We'll talk to you as soon as the time is right again, and congratulations on your next move.
Absolutely, man. Thanks. I appreciate it.
We have a very big one. Adrian Wojnarowski tweeting, D'Angelo Russell is going to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Andrew Wiggins.
Wow.
Look at this.
Oh, wow.
We also have a 21-21 protected first round pick, a 2022 second round pick. Warriors will send also Jacob Evans, Amari Spellman to the Timberwolves as well. Woo! Brian.
That's a huge win for the Wolves, because what the Wolves wanted to do, the reason this was slowing it down, they did not want to give their 2020 first round pick, unprotected. A couple of days ago, that was the kind of deal that, that Golden State wanted. They rolled the tape Wiggins, but they wanted to be incentivized with multiple picks, including this year's pick, which we know is going to be very good. For the Wolves to be able to make this deal without having to give up their pick this year is just a tremendous deal, completely energizes that team and really changes their outlook, especially considering they still have other assets that they did from Robert Covington.